We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Hornets just completed an improbable 3-0 week. But before we get talking to the basketball that went on this week, we decided to bring on a guest for you. It's John Krolik, who is a writer for NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk, and he is also the founder of Cavs the Blog, which is the True Hoop Network blog covering the Cleveland Cavaliers. Michael had the brilliant idea that since the Hornets are now essentially going through what the Cavs just recently did, losing a superstar and having to rebuild, you all might like, you know, the point of view of someone who's gone through that and had to live with a team that you know, is trying to turn it around. So, John, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Great.
Doing good, yeah. Yeah. And it's not only that. Let me, I took about 5-6 minutes to do my crack research, and let me just go through the list of similarities. So, okay, the lost star, which you did mention, when the star immediately left, Dan Gilbert threw a hissy fit. Happened with both
not the owner, Dan Gilbert.
Yeah, Dan Gilbert throws a little hissy fit, so that's a similarity. Teams start off better than expected after people thought they were essentially dead when the star leaves, giving fans the illusion of possible playoff perspectives. Hornets started 2-0. The Cavs actually started 4-3 last year. Both had absolutely horrible Januaries. John, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Cavs had like a 26-game losing streak and didn't win in January?
Yeah, it was something like that. And I think the worst one was that they didn't win a game in regulation for like 38 games, or like 34 games or something like that.
Wow, that's
they're basically like two Mo Williams game-tying shots away from going on a 38-game losing streak.
The team's best players go down. You guys lost Anderson for about two-thirds of the season. Hornets have yet to see any Eric Gordon. They both picked up big wins before the All-Star break. I think Cleveland beats LA on national television right before the break. The Hornets do the Lin possible and beat the Knicks. And finally, they both have two upcoming lottery picks in the future draft, leaving fans to care nothing about the games in the present and focus on next year's draft. So those are the similarities I came up with. Am I missing anything between these two teams?
Nothing that comes to mind for me. The Hornets almost have the luxury, although I think Eric Gordon's the guy that I want to touch on this podcast of, you know, he's a guy that's essentially the main player they got back for. I mean, LeBron left for really nobody, whereas the Hornets got a package that sort of revolved around Eric Gordon, and he's sort of taking the year or the month, or we don't know what's the timetable on his return right now. I don't remember it being particularly optimistic.
Every week it's 3 to 6 weeks from today.
Okay, so it's going to be a while, and he's essentially taking a long time off, you know, probably the majority of the season. So that's one thing, but Eric Gordon is one guy.
Well,
I want to talk about
those draft picks that you got from the Heat that came in the late that are going to be late 20s picks might actually see the court more than Eric Gordon will as a Hornet, so we'll see. But either way, so it was two pretty similar seasons. So if you could remember back that far, what kind of was the vibe of Cleveland fans on your site, even you yourself on how you covered the team? How drastically did that shift between LeBron's last year and that first year without him?
It was pretty bad. It was tough to cover, just in the sense that no two wins are really the same, it feels like, in the NBA, but losses can kind of tend to blend together. I think my recap length went down like they're a third as long, so it's like we didn't play defense, we didn't create any offense, they shot a lot of threes, Anton Jameson doesn't try hard, this team is terrible, I don't know what else to say. And like there's not even it's like, oh look, Christian Ayanga is playing, he is also bad. Like it was, you know, it's just sort of a depressing sort of thing. The Barron trade did change things a little bit, both because we got the pick and because Barron sort of unexpectedly to me sort of actually provided some cohesion, because he was a true point guard that the team didn't really have. And the team actually did sort of play like an actual NBA team after getting him, which was a difference. But yeah, more of the same than difference. It was sort of a miserable slog. And then obviously the big surprise was that the Clippers pick they got, which should have been the number, you know, 8, 9 pick, which would have given you someone like Jan Vesely or someone who hadn't been making him back, miraculously, you know, became the number 1 pick, and Kyrie had sort of been head and shoulders the best player from the lottery this season.
Right. So you follow the entire NBA. What do you think that Timberwolves pick is going to end up being? Do we got any chance?
What are they right? Where are my lottery odds? are they up yet? I don't think they are. Where am I standing?
Do you think that they're going to even remain in the lottery, or you think they're slipping into the playoffs?
What are they right now? No, they're not going to make the playoffs.
Thank you.
They're not gonna make you'd have to get above Memphis, Houston, or Denver, or the Lakers. That's not gonna happen. And even getting over Portland, that's gonna be tough. So they're not gonna make the playoffs. But yeah, it does look like they will be sort of out of range for sort of that miracle that is probably gonna be a pick in the 8, 9, 10, 11 range rather than sort of the 7, 8 range with that miracle chance for the number 1 pick. But you never know. I mean, we saw the Bulls. I think they had the 10th worst record in the league when they got Derrick Rose. So you never know.
Yeah, keep with the optimism. So in your point, you talked a little about Jameson and then Ayanga and then brought up the draft. At what point did you notice yourself or even notice the readers kind of shift focus from the games that were actually being played to talking about either the upcoming draft or taking minutes from veterans like Jameson, who obviously weren't part of the rebuilding process, and giving them to guys like Ayanga or Gee? I don't know if it's Alonzo Gee or Gee. Sorry. Giving it to guys like that, because the loss is coming either way. Was it frustrating to see the veterans still get the minutes when it was a clear rebuilding process?
If by the veterans you mean Anton Jameson, yeah, that was frustrating just because he openly wasn't trying. But in general, you know, these young guys, and I sort of, if there's like a comparable, I guess would be Alfredo Camino, where it's like a Hornets, where it's like, yeah, he's young and there are skills he could, you know, if talking about G has made some strides this year, but with a guy like Ayinga, it's like, yeah, he's young, he's athletic, but he's just not an NBA player. They didn't think he was an NBA player when he was drafted in the first round. They didn't have a nameplate for him. He hadn't looked like an NBA player at any point in his career. He's just not good. So it was just like, yeah, we're giving minutes to guys who were born later than other guys, but didn't really do a lot for me because it wasn't really like we were seeing these guys make strides or develop. It was a depressing season. It was just bad, basically. When you look at the Hornets, I mean, I think sort of the thing that you say when you've got a team in the kind of situation the Hornets are in is it's like an example I use a lot, Apollo 13, when the spaceship is broken down and they're sort of, you know, and they need to chuck everything that's unnecessary. It's sort of what on the spaceship is good. What do we want to keep? The guys up, Eric Gordon is a guy who they're obviously going to keep, although I have my sort of misgivings because he's due for, because basically Dell Demps is basically in a position where he's going to have to give him a payday that's going to be huge, right. Somewhere in the $15 million range. And I don't think he's a $15 million player. I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Chris Paul, David West, and Tyson Chandler were all on the Hornets. If you're talking about, if you had a team of Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Tyson Chandler, and David West, would you say, without hesitation, that Eric Gordon is the second best player on that team? Would you say, without hesitation, that Eric Gordon is the third best player on that team?
Right.
I mean, he is 23 and he is very good. But at the same time, I think he's a little closer to his ceiling than if you want to admit, because I can't really imagine an offense or a defense being really built around Eric Gordon. I think about as good as a second or third option that you'll find in this league. I think he's a very good spot-up shooter. I think he's very good when he drives to the rim. He's very strong. He's not afraid of contact. He's a good defender for his position. But you can't really build a defense around him because he doesn't have the length. He's really a man-to-man defender. He can't really help off the ball, which is so crucial. In the sort of new NBA we're seeing, and his stroke, it's pretty when he has his feet set, but he's not really a born playmaker. When he puts the ball on the floor, he's pretty much going to the rim or bust, and he's not really a guy you can run off a lot of screens or is going to make a lot of mid-range jumpers just because his stroke sort of requires he has his feet set. So that's a major worry I have about the Hornets going forward, is that they're sort of going to be forced to pay Eric Gordon almost, if not the max, close to max money, because if you're Dell.
So do you think they should try to trade his rights?
I don't know. There is no good answer. If the right deal comes along, I mean, you can't let him walk, because then you're essentially saying we traded Chris Paul for Alfredo Camino and Chris Kaman and the Minnesota pick. And that's not a good deal. But at the same time, there's a very good chance he ends up getting overpaid.
Hey, Amino had four rebounds the other night. So
yeah,
he's coming up. I mean, it wasn't to the same level, but the Cavs had an up and coming player in JJ Hickson, at least by most outsiders' accounts, that. In that year after
people who watched J.J. Hickson play basketball knew that he was bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, basketball IQ wasn't high. But, I mean, it was to that point where, I mean, if you look at the young pieces on Cleveland, he would have been one of the ones that I guess you would point to above, you know, any other. And they
decided. A lot of people had high hopes for J.J. Hickson.
What's that?
A lot of people had high hopes for J.J. Hickson. Again, I mean, there are guys who know how to play fast, and this is sort of the good news. I mean, there are guys who know how to play, and there are guys who don't know how to play.
Right.
And Hickson's a guy who's young, athletic, but didn't know how to play. Whereas a guy like Gustavo Ayón, who's kind of come out of nowhere, he's 26 years old, et cetera, but he knows how to play the game. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of film on him, but he's comfortable from the mid-range, he doesn't take bad shots, and that high post bounce pass he had in crunch time against the Knicks, that was a thing of beauty. I mean, if J.J. Hickson ever turns in a season like the one Gustavo Ayón is putting in right now, I'll be shocked if he does that ever.
Yeah. He's Ayón credible.
So, but I mean, what's the kind of blend there for the Cavs, you know, as far as having the vets and the young guys? You obviously can't just dump every vet, trade Varejao, even though he probably has high value right now. You've got to keep a mix of vets with these young guys like Kyrie, even if Varejao is going to be past his prime when the Cavs are contenders again. What kind of mix did they find that worked for them, you know, in not getting rid of all those vets and helping them groom the young guys?
I mean, define work. the Cavs are currently they're 11-17. The Cavs are 11-17 right now, and with New York going up, they're gonna miss the playoffs again. So I mean, and Varejao's kind of a special case because he's a good player, but he's a very tough one to trade because he's a guy that's one of the best power forwards in the league defensively and a very good center offensively. So what you need around him, ideally, is a guy who can defend the post and defend the rim on defense while stretching the floor on offense. And the Jonas Valanciunas can do that, but there are not a lot of those guys. Kamen's name popped up in rumors for the Cavs. I think that Kamen would make some sense next to Varejao, although I traditionally have not been super high on Chris Kamen. I haven't watched a lot of him, but I don't think he's a guy that really takes his defensive responsibilities as seriously as he should.
Come on, 15 points for 14 shots. That's what he does.
Exactly. Yeah, also, the Hornets are spending, I can't do the math right now in percentage, they're spending $26 million on their centers right now. That's going to have to change because I don't know what the total salary is on it. But that's got to be over 25% of what they're paying for their whole team.
Yes, and both those pieces are real quality, too.
Hey, it's better than the
25%
Washington's getting from their small forwards.
What's the Mecca? Yeah, Mecca's got an average per. Their Hornets are... The thing I like the best about the Hornets is Monty Williams. I think he's a real coach. When they got... I mean, last season was kind of a deja vu where Paul wants out and it's going to be terrible and it's all going down. New Orleans is a sinking ship. They really came out of the gates and surprised a lot of people because of Williams' defensive system. I sort of think that in the NBA, it comes down to how good is your best player and how good is your defensive system and how well do your role players fit with your best player. So with the Hornets, I see an issue with that, with number one, because I think Eric Gordon is sort of the guy in the media guide. I think he's sort of been thrust the title of best player when I don't think he's a real number one option for a playoff team in this league. I think he's a great number two option, maybe an ideal number three option. And again, this draft, maybe if you can land a Harrison Barnes, that would be nice. I can't believe they traded Darren Collison for Trevor Ariza. Trevor Ariza continues to parlay, you know, his 3-point shooting performance in the 2009 playoffs, into teams thinking that he's a guy who can make threes when his feet are set when he's just a bad shooter. I mean, if he shot, what did he shoot from three last year, like 32%?
I don't think, it was more like 20-something.
20-something, and that's with Chris Paul setting up a block. So if that's what you do, you're a bad shooter. And, I mean, I think if you have Collison and Eric Gordon, that's a backcourt right there. And you've got like, Ione and Okafor, who, you know, you go up and down Okafor. There's some nights where it looked like he's kind of a Kendrick Perkins type of guy, maybe Kendrick Perkins plus, a little more offensive talent. And then there are times where it's, what's the true shooting this year? Yeah, it's taking a nosedive. It's gone from 58.4 to 53.9. Which I guess is what happens when Chris Paul doesn't play for your team anymore. And I mean, Okafor is 29, but again, that salary is going to make him tough to move. He could be a guy that people would be willing to move for picks, but it's tough. In this draft, I think Harrison Barnes might be a guy they should target. I don't think Faroe can then be a starter at any point. I know he's athletic and he's 21, but he's bad.
All right, so we know you got to go. We'll get you out of here with this. Give us actually, let us know what you were doing on the draft lottery night when the Cavs lucked into the first and fourth pick, so we can try to replicate that and have that same kind of luck this May 18th, I believe it is.
What was I doing? I think I was living in Pasadena at the time. I wasn't watching the show. I was watching the lotteries that the Wizards won. But I wasn't watching. I found out about it on my phone, I'm pretty sure.
So here, your reason just not watch.
So don't watch.
Yeah, I guess don't watch, because if I'd been watching, it would have been like number four. And just don't draft Tristan Thompson. I can't believe that happened. It's still like I'm in shock that if they hadn't, like, that if the sort of fair, like, because of all the things, if Sterling had known there was going to be an amnesty and he would have been able to get rid of Barron without having to trade away number one draft pick, and they hadn't got the miracle pick, the Cavs would be the same team as last year plus Tristan Thompson, who is terrible.
All right, John. Well, thanks for joining us. And take note, Hornets fans, do not watch Draft Lottery. Was there any show that you might have been watching? It was on a Tuesday. Maybe.
I think I was like helping my friend move or something.
Oh, like okay. I'm not willing to go that far for Anthony Davis.
Of course, you're going to get guys who are going to go trade Okafor for pick. You know, trade Tiemann for some number one pick. You know. Every other GM in the league isn't stupid. they're not going to be like, oh, chance to pay Chris Kamen $14 million. Have all my picks. Would you like some young players with that too? So you just have to sort of keep your fingers crossed and, keep hoping. And, how long ago was it that the Saints were terrible? Things turn around.
All right. Thanks a lot, John.
Thank you. All right. Have a good night.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. Any reactions from what you heard from John?
I think he insulted me about Okafor.
What? You still don't think we could get Derek Williams for him?
I think last year you could have possibly moved him plus some other pieces for something like that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I need to go back and listen to what he said, but I just heard so many things that Eric Gordon can't do.
Right.
I want to hear something he can, but...
Well, he didn't even say the biggest problem, which is he can't stay on the frickin' floor.
Well, I mean, if he's that bad at doing everything, maybe it's a blessing to the Hornets that they have Bellinelli playing, who...
who's amazing. 3-0 this week. Bellinelli scoring how many? Like 16 a game?
Yeah, I mean, he's looking. I mean, it just seems like he's simplified his game, not trying to do too much, and just doing what he's good at. So it was an interesting week, but I guess on a scale of 1 to 10, it's a weird question to ask. Hornets go 3-0. How happy were you with the Hornets this week?
So while watching the games, I was, during the New York game, I was a 10 because stopping Lynn was extremely exciting to me. which is just so vengeful and petty. But against, you know, Milwaukee and Utah is more like a 7 all game long. I'm like, oh, yeah, I hope they're going to lose now. But, you know, for the week as a whole, you know, it's I'd probably still give it like a 7. I mean, I enjoy watching the team win. And, yeah, sure, I wish they'd have lost at the last possible moment to anybody except for New York. Yeah. What'd you got? What's your number?
See, I'm more of a big picture guy, so I say like a 2 or 3. I mean, if you listen to what John just said, basically without that magical luck of the Clippers pick being number one, first of all, two things had to happen. The Clippers had to be that stupid to just give away, and I'm sure Cleveland would have taken that same exact deal if the Clippers said, hey, we think there's 2 good players in this draft, so we'll give you that first pick, but top 2 protected. I'm 100% positive Cleveland would have taken that same deal because they thought they were getting the 8th pick anyway, so they would have said sure. But so,
yeah, Clippers couldn't do that, though. They had already protected a pick.
Oh, okay, well then give them a future. Do something unprotected. Regardless, how do you not know the amnesty's coming? So fine, they couldn't technically do that, but you know the amnesty is coming anyway, so basically, you know, you just...
It's Donald Sterling, man.
I know.
I mean, so, he's never going to pay for a player to walk away.
But anyway, the Cavs had to have that fall into his hands, into their hands, and they had to, you know, get the luck of the draw with the Bing Bong Vaz. Otherwise, he's right. They would be looking at Tristan Thompson, and I don't even remember who went 8th this year or where they were picking. But I know it was nobody who's made a great impact. But it's the same thing with the Hornets. I mean, if they're standing there with the 5th pick in a 4-person draft, like a couple years ago when Charlotte was right there, right after Chris Paul and Deron Williams went off the board and got stuck with Ray Felton. I mean, that's right. Something that could set your franchise back. I mean, Charlotte still hasn't recovered. Imagine if they would have had the 4th pick that year instead of the 5th. That franchise would have been drastically different. So while it's nice to have them win and have them, you know, defeat Lynn's sanity, long term, I'm afraid if this puts us in one of those situations where we have the 5th pick in a 4-person draft.
Yeah.
But it was nice. What was your most impressive performance by a Hornets player this week? What stands out?
I still just love Gustavo's game in New York. I mean, Gustavo in general. I mean, it's hard to ignore Chris Kaman and his 27-14.
Mm-hmm.
It was very good. And Vasquez has done some nice games, and even Ariza's pulled off some nice games.
Right.
But, I mean, it's part of its expectations. Ione was unheard of before he was signed. In fact, people kept saying, we kept hearing like, oh, the Hornets are going to sign Gustavo Ione. And I was like, yay. Why should I be excited? They're finding someone I've never heard of before. And, I mean, that game, he's just, I just enjoy watching him as like a basketball purist who likes intelligent basketball plays. Ione makes me a very happy man.
Did you notice I know Monty's listening to the podcast because I counted 7 times this week they did that. The play I called for in the last podcast where
high post,
they did it in the high post and the low post, but the one where Gustavo gets the entry pass, the guard runs by him and he has the option to hand it off or to take it to the hole.
Mm-hmm.
7 times they did it this week, 5 times he scored a bucket, 1 time he got fouled and hit the free throws, and 1 time he missed the shot, but just such a smart player. And really they're scratching the tip of the iceberg when they're figuring out what they could do with him. Cause I mean, you still have the language barrier. The guy's playing with completely different, I mean, think about it. The guy he's starting next to this week was sent away a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I mean, he's playing with different guys every day seemingly. And, you know, just still playing like a complete basketball player. And we got to get him on this in this futures game. Thiago Splitter went down, who I think Gustavo, Thiago are, you know, I think that Gustavo could aspire to be Splitter, but a little better. So we gotta find some kind of campaign to get him into the futures game. And hell, the guy who decides who replaces Thiago Splitter is the owner of the Hornets.
Right.
I don't care about a conflict of interest. We need Gustavo
High
on that team.
That's such a bad pun.
I know.
By the way, if the Cavs had sat exactly where they should have last year and the draft went the same order, they would have Tristan Thompson and Jan Vesely on their team. And Jan, in case many of you don't know this, he is playing for the awful Wizards team and can't even get on the floor because of injuries and because of general suckiness.
But his girl's hot. And I mean, and this is a stronger draft, so it's not a complete comparison, but
right.
But I think I just
if we end up with the fourth, you were saying this last week how you think if they drop, or not last week in that post about Gordon, you're talking about how, you know, if they go below, you know, the second pick or the third pick or something like that, they should, you know, bundle it and get rid of it.
Well,
for a veteran.
Okay, go.
Solinger. I'm saying grab Solinger. I don't give a crap.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was actually going to ambush you with this segment called Going the Veteran Route.
Okay.
But so here's the premise behind Going the Veteran Route. Let's say that in this scenario, the Hornets end up with the fourth pick and the 11th pick.
Okay.
Off the board are the three bigs, Solinger, Thomas Robinson, and Anthony Davis, obviously.
All right, so you just took, like, my top three.
Well, they have the fourth pick. So, yeah, I took the top three players off.
Well, you took my top three. That's not necessarily the top three it's going to go.
Well, those are the three guys that I was...
What about Drummond and Barnes and you know?
Well, like John Krolik just said, other teams' GMs aren't dumb. But, so that's...
Okay.
That's the scenario here, but... So under the scenario, Eric Gordon comes back, looks really good for the final 12 games, let's say. But like any guy who could play in this league, he wants to win as well. And he says to Demps, hey, look, you know, I want to stay in New Orleans. I want to be a part of this team for the future, but I don't want to be good in 4 or 5 years. I want to, you know, I haven't tasted the playoffs yet. This is my chance. I want to taste it soon. So, yeah, the Hornets have the fourth pick. Those three guys are out. I will throw some names at you for both the fourth and the 11th pick in the scenario in which Demps tries to duplicate the 2008 Celtics and say, okay, I've got my Paul Pierce and Eric Gordon. Let me go get some other guys to add to them right away, and let's start this winning process. So they have the fourth pick. Those three guys are off the board. The Celtics are in total rebuild mode, but they don't believe in Rondo as their number one guy. Already burned bridges with him. So the Hornets have the chance to throw that fourth pick at the Celtics, along with who are in love with Harrison Barnes, along with, let's say, Gravis Vasquez and Henry, just to give the Celtics some other young guys for Rajon Rondo. Personal feelings aside, do you pull the trigger on that?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. The Lynn situation keeps going on, and New York finally realizes that everybody can't coexist. You could have a similar deal, maybe some different young pieces instead of Vasquez. We're talking about Al-Farouq Aminu for either Stoudemire or Melo. Fourth pick.
The fourth pick? I don't pull either of those guys. I don't believe in Stoudemire or Anthony going forward as pieces you build around. So I wouldn't pull that trigger.
You don't think Eric Gordon and Stoudemire are just being a pick and roll combo?
No, I really don't think. I mean, Stoudemire. I mean, his knees worry the crap out of me. I wouldn't make that risk. I mean, I know where you're going with that. And Stoudemire more than Anthony, I would go after Stoudemire. But I don't know, that would be really hard for me to offer the fourth pick for Stoudemire.
All right, here's some for the 11th pick, some interesting scenarios. So Duncan is a free agent. The Spurs get knocked out in the first round again. They're just they're done, and they're looking to rebuild. With some kind of package of youth plus the 11th pick, you have the option of either Ginobili, who has 1 year left on his deal, or Parker, who has three, I believe. Either one of those guys interests you with the 11th pick and some other young pieces like Vasquez, Henry, Aminu, whatever.
I would grab Parker in a second.
Okay, so you would commit to, I mean, so then you're committing to backcourt of him and Gordon, and you think that with some other pieces that could be a good enough team? Because, I mean, Parker would be 30 by the time you pulled that trigger.
So let me ask you this question, though. I mean, are you trying to get to contender status right away?
No, I don't think that. I mean, I'm not saying that's just impossible.
So what you're trying to do is make Eric Gordon happy by at least being a playoff team.
Playoff team with some potential where if I hit on a couple more moves. I mean, because think about it, you could put two of these moves together, right? I mean, you could do Tony Parker and Stoudemire if you're willing to trade that fourth pick and the 11th pick. And then, yeah, that's not a bad big three of Parker, Stett, and Eric Gordon. Or you could do Rondo and some other guys I have in there with the 11th pick are guys like Gortat or somebody like Bogut or Scola or Al Jefferson. You know, all possibilities of team just looking to kind of rebuild more with youth or move away from that. I think you could put together at least a legitimate three, maybe not a big three, but a bigger than average size three if you decide to go the veteran route and be creative and then have guys like Ion and Jay Smith and some of these other guys off the bench, that's not a bad team in a Western Conference that looks like OKC and everybody else.
I will say absolutely with what the Hornets have right now, just the assets that they have, you could trade and get enough players to make them a playoff team. I don't think that's a good plan.
but you still have upside. So let's say under my scenario, you got a starting lineup of Rondo, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Ion, and either Gortat or Bogut.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that team doesn't have the potential. I mean, those are all still young guys. Guys well below 30. I think the oldest in that group would be Ion and Ariza at 26. You know, and then still you have Dell Demps pulling the trigger on a lot of those moves that he makes where he turns C assets into B-minus assets.
Yeah, I just think that most of the guys that you're going to be able to get for the 4th and 11th trigger, or for the 4th and 11th pick, those guys are going to have their own issues. Like, I mean, all of those guys you've met, the only one there that in that group that you have, that I have no hesitation going after, and I think you're overrating that you could get him for the 11th pick, is Tony Parker.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a stronger draft, like I said. You know, the Ray Allen, what was the flaws in Ray Allen's game in 2008? They got him for the 5th pick in a far weaker draft. I mean, a pick that turned out to be Jeff Green, but could have been Ejion Leon.
Right.
You know,
but you also remember the trade that got Ricky Rubio into the Timberwolves was for Foy and Mike Miller.
Yeah, but they would have never made that pick. Everybody thought Rubio was going number two overall at that point, right. And that was supposed to be a two-person.
There's a lot of luck that has to go on, and the fact that people keep insisting on this podcast that other GMs aren't stupid is ridiculous, because half the GMs in the league are stupid. Compared to the other half of the GMs.
They're stupid in retrospect, but things, I mean, they have their philosophies that sometimes don't work out. And even the guys that people pick on, David Kahn, people pick on, I could show you a bunch of great moves he's made. And, you know, people pick on the Gasol trade, but long term, Memphis didn't really lose that trade. People are just so short-sighted.
Yeah, they got stupid lucky in that
situation. Oh, of course they got lucky because nobody knew Marc Gasol was going to be good. But anyway.
No one did. The dude weighed like 340 pounds when he was traded.
There we go. But anyway, the point is, I mean, is that something that you even consider? Because, I mean, you and I do the looking to the future pieces. We're obviously focused on the draft. There's a lot of guys coming in. But the draft process is just kind of a throw up as any, and you've got external factors. We're going to have a new owner going into next year. I don't know how patient somebody who spends $350 million is going to be. And, you know, you have somebody like Eric Gordon who wants to win. I mean, is it at least a possibility in your mind to go more the young veteran route as opposed to just hoping that, you know, these young guys pan out and keep trying to develop this plethora of young players?
So, no, I don't actually see Dempsey. I think they're committed now to the youth. They kind of have to be in a lot of ways. But again, if you end up with like the 4-11th, or let's say it even gets the absolute worst situation, because there is the possibility of people sneaking into the lottery ahead of the Hornets or into the top of the picks ahead of the Hornets. The Hornets right now could be pushed down to the fifth pick in the draft. No, the sixth pick in the draft if two teams slot into that first and second spot ahead from behind them. So the Hornets can get pushed down. And if that happens, then maybe they would go the route you're saying. But again, that wounds their ability to make these trades. I would say this, if the consideration we're worrying about right here is Eric Gordon saying he wants out and he's going to sign a one-year tender if they don't put a team together that can go for the playoffs, I would rather trade Eric Gordon right now for a pick in the top five or six than try to go for a veteran team and hit the playoffs next season.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's a scenario too, and one that could be interesting, because imagine Dwight Howard doesn't get traded and the Nets just believe that they're going to sign him outright.
Right.
That would be an interesting scenario in which the Hornets basically trade Eric Gordon, and then...
If you pick the team, I was looking, there's two teams I see in the very early lottery that I think you could convince them to trade their pick for Eric Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah. The tough part with that, though, is you can't trade Eric Gordon on draft night.
Right.
Because he wouldn't have signed his qualifying offer yet. But yeah.
You'd have to take the risk, right? You'd have to take the risk at this trade deadline.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's an interesting thing to think about, but it's, you know, there's just, I think there is, I give it a better chance than you do, not to go after, you know, 30-year-old guys the way that the Celtics did with their picks. But I do think if Eric Gordon shows that he's a legit, you know, all-star in this league in those last couple games, guys like Ion and Vasquez show that they could be quality players on a playoff caliber team. I think the Hornets are a lot closer. You know, as we've seen this week, they're not Charlotte is what I'm saying. When this team is healthy, they mm-hmm. are a team that probably in a normal season would win 35 to 40 games, in my opinion.
Which is a bad thing.
Right. But if you add Rondo and Gortat to that, a 35-40 win team should be a 50-55 win team. That's my point, is that if you look at this team as a 35-40 win team, instead of adding Harrison Barnes and waiting on these guys and hope they develop, if you add Rondo and Gortat to a 35-40 win team, that should be a team that, you know, in the first year is a top five seed in the West and has potential to grow because the whole team is young. But all right, just something I wanted to throw out, but it's something that we kind of talked about there. I also want to get your opinion on these four current Hornets players, because it seems to be a lot of discussion in our comments over whether insert player name here could be a starter in this league, whatever that means. So I'll let you set the baseline. So this way, you know, we have some definition for what we're talking about. So if somebody says to you, can Ion be a starter in this league? what does that question really mean to you if you break it down? And then let's use that definition for a couple guys on this team.
Sure. What I would say is, can Ione be a starter in this league? In general, I think that there are 15 teams in the league who are completely satisfied with their starter. Like, basically, that's a top 15 set of guys at that position. And they're not looking necessarily that they have to upgrade him. That's not a position that's bad for them. They trade, of course, for a better version in the list. But essentially, there's like 15 guys who are at power forward who are good. And you're not looking to upgrade them. And then, of course, there's the next 15 who are less than average as a starter. And those are the guys who are always the borderline starters. And on some teams, yeah, they would start. And some teams, they would be the sixth man or the seventh man. So what I would say is, I don't even think being a starter is a way you should do it. You should say, is this guy a better than average starter for a team? Because let's say everybody else, if they're not, then they're going to be looked at as somebody who needs to be upgraded.
So let's pick a guy. Let's try to think of a guy for each position. So at power forward, I'll try to think of like the 14th or 15th. I would say David Lee is right around the 15th best power forward in the league.
He might be a little better than that, but yeah, right around 10 to 15.
Power forward's not fair because it's a uniquely strong position.
Right.
But yeah, he might be a little too good. Yeah, power forward's going to be difficult just because. Oh, wow. I'm going to get stuck here.
With your own question, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just don't think power forward's fair. But okay, so David Lee's a better than average player. But I really do think if we were to rank power forwards, he would be, you know, right around 13, 14, 15. So if you
look at purely PER, which, you know, it has its warts, but if you look at purely PER-wise, David Lee, if you toss out the guys like you know, Brandon Wright, who has no business being on this because he only plays a few minutes a game.
Right.
He is actually the 15th player.
Wow, look at me. Pulling it out of my arse. Okay, so Gustavo Ayon. Will he, at any time in the future, I know he has a completely different skill set, but be as good of a player as David Lee, where he could be a starter and not being looked to be replaced?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
I mean, I think Gustavo Ayon is one of those guys who. So I think we had this conversation once before, probably off, you know, the podcast. I think Ayon is a guy who, given starter minutes around 30 for almost any team, he would average you a double-double. He would be your PJ Brown. He would be, you know, the old Dale Davis, Antonio Davis kind of guy. And maybe Louis Scola before he had that one awesome year, where, you know, his ceiling is probably, you know, like a 15 and 11 kind of guy, but he's probably going to give you more like, you know, 10 and 10 or 11 and 10 kind of thing. Do you disagree with that?
I don't know. Maybe I'm not seeing clearly, or I have some kind of bias just because he didn't come up through the traditional way, but I guess I don't know if it matters as much. Like I look at a guy like Omar Asik for Chicago, and I don't think he's ever going to be a day in day out starting center in the league, but that guy is so immensely valuable to that team. It doesn't matter. I mean, when I'm watching the Bulls game, it was something like he's second in the NBA in rebounds off the bench and third in blocks off the bench. And he comes in, and the Bulls come in with a unit that's just a defensive-minded unit, and literally nobody scores on that unit. And he's just so valuable that I really don't think that you're putting a Seek down by saying that he's not a starter in this league. So I think of a guy like that, where I don't think that you're ever going to pencil him in as your long-term starter, but I don't think it matters. I don't think that would make Ayon any less valuable.
All right. So here's my ideal situation. Grab Anthony Davis or Jared Solinger, start them at power forward, and have Ione be your backup center and power forward. I don't think he's got the strength to be a full-time starting center in the NBA, but I think he's a perfectly great backup center in the NBA and a perfectly great backup power forward. And like I said, I think he could be a power forward, but if, of course, I'm still dreaming of the star power forward. So, I mean, Ione would be the ideal third big man on any team.
Right. Okay, so we're both kind of close right around there. At worst, third big, at best, legitimate power forward starter. Okay, point guard, Grievous Vasquez showed some things again this week. If we're looking at middle-of-the-pack point guards, another stacked position, we're talking about guys like Stuckey, Ty Lawson, Jose Calderon, Mike Conley. Could Grievous be in that area of solid starting point guard?
No, I don't think so. And, I mean, Grievous, I have a really hard time, like, killing him because I love the effort and what he tries to do out there. But, I mean, if he was your starter and all – so let's take the example of, like, the Boston Celtics and – you know, Kendrick Perkins. If it's that kind of situation, sure, he could be your starter and be okay, because you've got four other positions where you've got a guy who's in the top 15. But Vasquez is just, he's too limited, and if he is at all having to be the guy who has to break down the other team and create shots, which is what is expected of a point guard, he's a liability. Because as soon as they throw an actual athletic defender on him, he can't get past him. And, I mean, after these games, like against New York, where people are pointing to him and saying, oh, he's, you know, you stop killing Grievous Vasquez. I mean, when they actually put a competent defender on him, he couldn't do anything. But it was when Jeremy Lin and Iman Shumpert were guarding him that suddenly he was, you know, tearing the other team apart. And it's because those guys are not good defenders. It makes all the difference in the world.
How about in a scenario in which he didn't have to be the primary ball handler? I mean, I think of somebody like Mario Chalmers, who Miami Heat run the offense through Wade, through LeBron, and Chalmers could sit there, hit a couple big shots, you know, when called upon. Is there any chance that if Gordon could really be the ball handler that we saw in limited time and we know his great numbers in the pick and roll, and say they did bring on, you know, another small forward with ball handling capability. If you could take the ball out of Grievous's hands and basically just, you know, use his strengths in that capacity, could he be a starting point guard in this league?
No. No, I think that actually accentuates his issues. Because his issue is that he can't, I mean, one of his primary issues is he can't actually shoot. So when you play a point guard like the Bulls did for years, a point guard who plays off of a shooting guard who attacks or a small forward that attacks, that's what the Celtics are having the issue right now with Rondo, which is the big reserve everybody has about Rondo is, you know, Pierce and Allen, or Pierce more than Allen, but they can break down the defense, but you kick the ball out to Rondo and you've just wasted everything you've done up to that point. And Vasquez can knock down a shot here and there, but he's not a good shooter. So unless he develops a three-point shot, I think that actually makes it a little worse, because the one good thing he does is find people open for passes. So if you've taken the ball out of his hands, you've taken away his best ability.
And just as a slight note, I know John Krolik was just on here saying how nice the Collison Gordon backcourt would be. But Grievous Vasquez has a higher per than Darren Collison this year. I don't see a huge difference in those. I was never a Collison fan to begin with. I think both are below average starters in the league. So just saying. And now this next one is going to sound ridiculous, but hear me out. These are your middle of the pack starting shooting guards in the league. We're talking about guys like J.J. Redick, Nick Young, Jason Richardson, and coming in at number 21, the immortal Marcus Thornton. Is there any chance Xavier Henry in a weak shooting guard league could be an average starting shooting guard?
So I said this in the last recap. I cannot comment in an intelligent way on Xavier Henry because I don't think my eye ever is attracted to him on the basketball floor. Maybe that is the comment I have. He never does anything brilliant. He never does anything amazing. And he always kind of is half he's got an indecision when he catches the ball. So let me turn it around on you because I've really struggled. I want to look at Henry because he was a guy who I actually liked coming out of that draft. I was like, I'd like it if the Hornets picked him because they had the 11th pick before we traded it. When you watch Henry, is there anything that, like, you say that is what he makes his money on in the NBA?
Yeah, there's two things that I like. One, I do think he has the capability to guard two positions.
Okay.
And I think with a little bit more work and focus and a good defensive-minded coach, I mean, Tony Allen wasn't a stopper in the league the second he came into the league. He had the skill set, but now he has the smarts. I could see him being a Tony Allen type of defensive player in 2 years. So that's one thing I like. Two is that there's so many shooting guards, especially when they're young, that just love shooting from the outside and settle for shots. He at least attacks the rim. That, to me, I don't think could be taught. Now, he has huge biceps, and yet he's so weak around the rim. Mm-hmm. That's a little concerning. I mean, I don't understand how that's possible, but again, he's young. So there's at least things there that I see some kind of potential for. Do I think it'll pan out? Not necessarily, but I have more hope for him than the last guy on our list.
Well, let me before you jump for Henry, let me throw you something at you. In a complete vacuum, contracts are not an issue. Henry, Bellinelli, who would you take?
For how long? For right
now? One season. This season. Oh, one season. Henry, Bellinelli.
Fair.
Okay, let me change it then. So you're going to sign them to a 5-year contract. Both of them are willing to accept a contract of $1.5 million a year for the next, make it 4 years. Which would you take?
I'd take Henry.
Take Henry?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Only because I think it is harder to get that defensive skill set and the guy who attacks. I mean, I think I could go out and find Bellinelli's been doing something great this week, but you telling me Steve Novak doesn't do the same thing for the Knicks? Guys like that seems to me that you could find if you really just need a spot-up shooter. There's enough of them in the league. And speaking of Steve Novak, he's one of the baselines for our small forwards. We got Steve Novak.
That's just insane, by the way.
Yeah, he is playing too good. But no, seriously, starter-wise, middle of the pack, we're looking at Marvin Williams, Mike Dunleavy, guys.
Immortal Tracy McGrady.
Jared Dudley, McGrady, guys like that. Ariza actually falls 26th on this list. So guys of that level, is there any chance Al-Farouq Aminu could ever be that middle of the road or better starting small forward in this league?
I am ready to cut bait on Al-Farouq Aminu. Huh. I don't think he's got the instincts. I just don't think he's got the abilities. If you told me I would have to have either Ariza or Aminu on my team for the next 5 years, contracts are not part of the issue, I would take Ariza every time, no matter what.
Yeah, and it's a little frustrating, but Monty has recently been playing Aminu at the four more. Is there any potential that could kind of save Aminu and he could be a four off the bench along the lines of how Travis Outlaw was used by Monty in Portland?
So, I see that when I watch Aminu, I think that his skill set that he's displayed so far fits the four better than it fits the three. But it still doesn't get rid of the fact that he just doesn't—he doesn't know what he's doing. He has no confidence. He has no. His decisions are frequently wrong. Like I said this about Ariza a few weeks ago. Ariza is bad offensively, but it's not because he's making the wrong decisions. He's making the right decisions. He just can't finish them. Aminu, he's not even making the right decisions. And I don't think that's going to change if you shift him to power forward. Now, maybe if you put him a little closer to the basket, you can take advantage of his one amazing attribute, which is he's a really good rebounder and he's a good help defender. So maybe as like a fifth man, a big man on a team, and for very situational roles, you could have him around. But I'm really, really down on Aminu, and I think, you know, part of that's just, you know, hangover from Julian Wright.
So, to recap it, you're saying we have, out of these four guys, one starter, a solid bench guy, a possible bench guy, and somebody who should be dumped as soon as possible.
Yeah. So, okay, let me, and I think we've had this kind of discussion before. What do you think, and I just want to get your opinion, because you're always like, you know, other GMs aren't stupid. You're always saying that. and so we're going to just assume all GMs are equally smart, and some other team gets the first pick of the draft with your boy Anthony Davis there. And we end up with, let's be nice, the third pick and the 10th pick in the draft. Take our current roster, the third and 10th pick in the draft. What do you offer that guy, this brilliant GM who has a horrible team and has the first pick of the draft? What do you offer him for that first pick of draft? Do you go after it hard, or do you just kind of throw something at him and not really serious? What do you do?
I would give up I would give up everything.
Eric Gordon?
Yeah.
So if he wants the third pick of the draft and Eric Gordon, you'd give that to him?
No, yeah, without a question.
Okay.
I mean, I said this with the Chris Paul trade as well. I think what a lot of people aren't factoring into the Chris Paul trade is that trade allowed the Hornets to be this bad. So if you think about it, so people are saying, oh, the Hornets didn't get anything in return. Well, let's imagine they hold on to Chris Paul like the Cavs did with LeBron for that final year. With Chris Paul, this team is still a playoff team, or at the very worst, a fringe team. So they're, you know, we're talking about pick 12 through 18. Trading Chris Paul not only got back those assets we know he got back, it also moved the Hornets' own pick from that range up into where it's going to be. So long story short, what I'm saying with the getting up to the number one pick is that not only will trading all those assets get me Anthony Davis, the one guy that I feel could be a Hall of Famer out of this class, but it's also going to make me bad enough next year that I'm going to get a Shabazz Muhammad or, you know, whoever else comes along to pair with him. Because really, the only chance I see the Hornets having is getting superstar after superstar. So you get Anthony Davis, you have a top three pick again the next year, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I give up Eric Gordon, because by giving up Eric Gordon, that only gives me a chance to suck again next year.
Wow. Dooming us all.
I don't know. I like this season. I have fun. I mean, I never have the heart pounding crazy at the end of games. There's a no-lose scenario.
I felt a little bit of it during that New York game.
I did too, only because, and I'm so mad that the media has made me hate Jeremy Lin, but I do. Yeah. I honestly do. I I'm not a hype guy unless it's deserved, and it was nice to win that game, but we got.
So I do want to point something out though. You went on a little Twitter rant there.
I did.
About Jeremy Lin. And you listed off all kinds of point guards that you would take over Jeremy Lin. He's third in PER, you know.
Oh God. Yeah, and Jordan Farmer is I think 14. So
yeah,
that excites me as much. No, I mean the guy is a good player. I give him his due. I can't even really think of a comparison. I think he's a solid point guard, but I think it's kind of unfair to him, you know, the way that they've kind of set him up for this fall, when you know, he's an above average point guard that is just going to have way too much on his shoulders. So it's just a little upsetting, but anyway, three games this week, the Hornets only back to back to back, at Oklahoma City, at Indiana, at Cleveland, and then the All-Star break, which I'll be going to and hopefully covering Gustavo Ayon. So what do you see this week from those three teams? Any of them jump out at you?
Well, I mean, Indiana, I mean, that's a game that I'm really interested to see. I don't know how much other people have followed David West and what he's doing in Indiana. But I got to keep reminding myself whenever I look at his numbers and what he's doing there, that he is coming off of a major knee injury. Cause you know, I've said this before. He was my favorite Hornet. I liked him better than Chris Paul. I liked him even better than Tyson Chandler, even though Chandler, I thought, was the second best player on the team at the time. But he is only averaging 12.5 points a game in Indiana. His shooting percentages are down. His rebounds are his normal thing. He's like I said before, other than his points per game, he doesn't really do anything else above average, and it's kind of accentuated here. So everybody gets to watch David West. I kind of hope we see a big game out of him, though I'm not holding my breath, because they have a really, really spread offense, and their man is still Danny Granger, who, by the way, is having an unbelievably awful season. All those people who are saying Danny Granger for Eric Gordon, if that trade ever goes down, I will vomit all over the place. Because Danny Granger is 28, and he's having the worst season of his career when he's surrounded with the most talent of his career, which is a horrible, horrible combination.
Yeah, see, I'm not rooting for David West. I mean, David West pissed me off again this week.
Yeah, I remember that. Oh, this week. What did he say this week?
Well, this week he said that he's never played with a center like Roy Hibbert. Give me a effing break. Roy Hibbert couldn't hold 2007-2008 Tyson Chandler's jockstrap.
Yeah, but at least Hibbert can score on his own.
Oh, my God. It's just so frustrating. Like, just... He got me mad in the off season. Then that comment, and it's just, you know, maybe he's trying to sound good or build up his new teammates or something. But just, you know, frustrating to me that a franchise that, you know, gave him a chance. I understand he doesn't like Shin and he was in limbo with the ownership, but the franchise gave him a chance when not many others were looking at him, and you know, put him in almost a perfect position when you think about the weapons that he had to make him the best player possible. And now, you know, just the things he said in the off season, combined with the fact that he's never played with a center like Roy Hibbert, whatever. So I'm rooting against him. And, what's fascinating to me is this,
Wait, he played with Jamal McGlure his first year.
I know, this is what I'm saying.
So I guess he did play with a center very similar to Roy Hibbert.
he got to play next to P.J. Brown and even Lee. I'm not...
Were you about to say Lee Nalon?
I was about to say Lee Nalon.
He's not even a center.
Oh, he was big enough to be. Tractor trailer, the whole team. But no, Indiana's just they were a team that I really wanted to root for. I'm not as down on Granger as you are, probably because I subconsciously know he's going to be a Hornet in the near future. So I got to try to look for the
God, I hope not.
Try to look for the good, but no, seriously, that Indiana team is just puzzling to me. I mean, they killed Charlotte today and New Jersey the night before, but prior to that, I think they had lost six straight, and just a really odd team. But I'm interested in that Cleveland game. Again, there are kind of season before doppelganger, had a really interesting win tonight over Sacramento. They're 12-17, which, you know, John Crolla kind of made fun of, but to me that far surpassed my expectations. I thought Cleveland and Charlotte were by far the least talented teams heading into the season.
Irving's been a surprise.
Yeah, they really are, and you know, it's just interesting to see how they still kind of blend the youth with some of the veterans like Jameson and Varejao. They went out and got Caspi in the off season, and just to kind of to look at that team, and especially, I mean, their home crowd is revitalized yet again. Just 1 year later, after getting the right player in the draft, mm-hmm. I mean, that team is that stadium is rocking again, and people are really into it. So, to me, you know, it's possible that the Hornets could be looking at that if they get the right player in the draft. So that'll be an interesting game this week. It'll be the final of a back-to-back-to-back. The Hornets don't have any of those stars that they have to sit. You know, it's funny to me that you hear Popovich, oh, there's no way I would play Duncan or Ginobili or Parker all three nights of a back-to-back-to-back. The Hornets don't have any player like that.
I know.
That they got to worry about resting, so everybody's full go. So they might catch somebody on that night. In your opinion, what's if you were to rank those games most winnable to least winnable?
Well, I mean, the least winnable is not any question, OKC. I think actually the most winnable, I'm going to go, just because it's the second night of the back-to-back-to-back, I'm going to go with Indiana. Because Indiana's not playing well right now. They had lost seven straight.
Right.
And then they won one, or maybe they've won two now. So I think Indiana is in a place where you could jump on them and make them pay. So the weird thing about, I mean, Indiana in general is you look at their offense and you think a team that sports Collison, whose talents are mostly offensive, and Hibbert, whose talents are mostly offensive, and Granger, whose talents are mostly offensive, and David West, that they've been winning in the past because of offense, but they're not. You look at the efficiencies on that team, and they're none of them are good at scoring. I mean, they're all the most efficient scorer on that team is Paul George, who's supposed to be the defensive stopper.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a weird team, and I think that if you crash the boards hard against them, that you have a chance, and I think these Hornets can do that.
Yeah, and just to pass along some bad news, people know what time we're doing this podcast. Kevin Love hits two free throws with 3 seconds left to propel Minnesota to a 92-91 victory. So we can't even get that piece of good news on the podcast as we head out. Timberwolves are now 500. Swear to God, Love and Rubio just pissed me off.
everything pisses you off. So basically, we're two guys. I hate every scorer, and you hate every young, exciting team.
I hate every young, exciting team whose draft pick we have. I wish we could go back in time and find somebody to take the Minnesota pick and Aminu.
Doesn't that mean you actually hate the Hornets?
Ugh, I guess. But the Hornets, yeah, the Hornets pissed me off this week by winning. But
I know, those motherfuckers.
But yeah,
what are they thinking?
I really wish we could. I would love to see what the Hornets could have got for the mini pick and Aminu right after the Chris Paul trade. But whatever. All right. So yeah, I agree with you. I think Indy's most winnable. I think they're going to be exhausted and ready for a break going into that Cleveland game. But after a 3-0 week, I have a little more faith this week. I'm actually giving the Hornets a win and going 1-2.
1-2, huh? Yeah, me too. I mean, I kind of want to go, you know, 2-1, but there's no way we're taking OKC. That's just not happening. So I'd have to be saying they're going to take Cleveland, and it's just the back-to-back-to-backs. If there was like a day or two between the Indiana game and the Cleveland game, I think we have like an even amount of talent on the floor with Cleveland most nights. So I could see us pulling that one out too, but 1-2, hopefully 0-3.
Yes, sir.
And hopefully I get to watch David West have a huge game when Gustavo Ayón's not on the floor. because I'm going to root for Gustavo Ayón over David West in this game.
Yeah, and then right afterwards he'll say that he never had a point guard like George Hill. or an outside shooter like, I don't even know, like Dante Jones on his team.
Or you could say he never had a point guard like Darren Collison before.
Oh, God. He'll say...
Which would really be weird.
Yeah. He doesn't even remember.
All right.
Yeah.
So you got anything else you want to talk about?
That's it. I'll be blogging from All-Star Weekend. And hopefully next time we come back on, maybe there'll be some trade or ownership news to talk about.
Yep. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. Have a good night.
Thanks to John Krolik. Let's have the ball time really each and every day. New Orleans is a party town. Ain't nothing but a party. Down by New Orleans, the land of Redskins, slot machine, voodoo queen.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.